Speaking of movies, do you know James Gunn says that lovable rapscallion, James Gunn Esquire the Third, doesn't make any sense. He says that there is an extant Easter egg in Guardians of the Galaxy that somebody has not found yet.
Okay.
Still.
All right.
And he, as everybody knows, there are a lot of sort of Easter eggs. Well, in all Marvel movies, but especially in Guardians of the Galaxy, I think as a property that has connected to nothing else. It's not like we have to get Uncle Ben's death and Aunt May's wheat cakes in there. Like, we just are going to show a bunch of characters nobody's ever heard of and in a configuration that nobody's ever seen before.
Right.
Here's your chance to just to pile it full of all kinds of little things.
Sure.
Great example. Not coming to me right now.
Oh.
How the duck being in there?
Being
like Adam Warlock's cocoon is in there, although I think they've gone back and forth on whether that's what it really is or not, probably depending on whether they can squeeze him into the films or not. But he says that there is one huge thing, and he's been saying this for over a year now, that nobody has seen before.
Okay, nobody's picked out the Easter egg?
No, and people come, you know as well as I do, that he is very active on Facebook.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's taking questions all the time. He answers fans' questions when he can. And nobody in all the questions he's been asked has even come close. Well, I think he said that somebody has gotten close.
But nobody's gotten it.
Yeah. To the point where fans have now accused him, or are accusing him, of trolling, basically. Like, there's no Easter egg. You're just messing with us now. And, you know, you're just trying to keep the people's eyes on your film or whatever. And he says, no.
I don't think that's true.
Well, he says, I'll tell you something. I'll tell you, for real, Tannen Moores. That's
what?
That's one of the fans that asked him a question, and he replied directly to them. He says, if there's no Easter egg, I will give you $100,000. You can consider it a legally binding contract. Now, that is not a legally binding contract.
No, it's not.
But he is putting his money where his fingers are, or a picture of his mouth is.
Mm-hmm. His gum chomping mouth.
Yeah, well, he takes the gum out of his mouth, puts the money in it, and then starts chomping on that.
Sure.
No, James, wait! So, apparently it is apparently real.
I didn't doubt it. I didn't think you would just make it up.
But what could it be?
I don't know. I mean, and if it's that huge, like, it has to not be very obvious, right?
Well, maybe so obvious, it's right in front of us. And we don't even
think of it. I mean, there has to be some reason why fans are missing it, right?
Yeah, right. Well, I would think so.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to think of what it could be, too. And also, it questions, I mean, now that $100,000 is on the line, it questions your definition of an Easter egg. Like, what do you consider to be an Easter egg?
Wouldn't it just be anything that refers to another film or something else?
How are the ducks laying eggs? Actually, the two things I mentioned are both egg-like. There's a cocoon and a duck.
Yeah, that's true.
Who came first? Actually, that's stupid. There were eggs long before there were chickens in evolution. But anyway, I don't know. I can't help but feel that either it is something that is so obvious. It's so obvious that it's like a technicality. Like, technically,
it's an Easter egg.
It's an Easter egg. Like, oh, this is a reference to The Great Train Robbery, the first movie ever, because it's a movie or something. And that'll be dumb. Or it'll be something that's so tiny and small. Like, we put, I don't know, some obscure Kree or Skrull character, you know, in the very background of something like that. Oh, look, it's Ronan's brother-in-law.
Sure.
You know, in the background of the nowhere scene or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I can't help but think that it's going to be
It's going to be one of those two extremes, for sure. I mean, any hints as to what it could even be? Because, like, how do you even, like...
There are
fans out there that are just racking their brains
now. And for him, he should start hinting now, because I know it's fun for him in, like, a game, but if it doesn't get revealed, that's when he has to pay $100,000.
Right, exactly.
If he just told somebody, or if he's like, it rhymes with miter spam, the amazing bleeder blocker or something like that, then they got it, it'd be like, all right, you got it. If he's too crafty, if he wins, he loses.
You know what a big one would be is if they had, like, Captain Marvel in there before she was even cast. But somehow I doubt that is a thing.
I kind of doubt it, too. Although I feel like they've said to the... I think they've said in the negative that she's not in this film. Because I think people have been like... And that's the thing. Somebody, some Reddit post or somebody out there has collected everything that he's ever said yes or no about these eggs. So I'm sure that we could find a list and cross off a bunch of things to begin with. Because the first 50 things we think of
are not going to be it.
The collective hive mind of the internet has already thought of, right?
Yeah. At least.
This is rough. I want that money, except I'm not going to get it because...
It already exists. You know it exists.
It's a perfect zero-sum game. More on that term later. Because even if we got together to help Tandem or whatever her name was, it wouldn't help because all we would do is just prove that it... If we could get together and prove it didn't exist and then we all split the money...
But if it does exist... How many people are we talking? Like,
how can we prove it does?
Yeah. Yeah.
I want money.
Okay.
I want a lot of money.
Yeah.
So please go to Amazon through our links provided on our page, our Just Enough Trope page for this podcast, the Just Enough Trope podcast. I'm your host, Caliban, joined as always by my co-host.
Hi, I'm Econ Hanna.
Forget about that money thing. Unless you're going to go shopping.
Are we forgetting about it? Or?
Unless you're going shopping.
Okay.
Especially on Cyber Monday. If you're going to get some of those great deals, you can just click through our Amazon ad on justenoughtrope.com. And then anything you buy costs exactly the same, except the spiritual cost is less. Because you're helping something out. You're helping out us.
Yeah.
And we want to bring you all the news that's fit to cast in the world of nerdy entertainment. And also, sometimes we see movies.
Sometimes we do.
And we have seen, sometimes we repeat things that the other host says.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't do it there.
No, I didn't.
And in this case, we have a review of a nearly fresh, like a pizza, like a couple hours after it's been delivered. It's fine. You can still eat it.
Sure.
Right. The party's grinding on still. You know, you're working on, you're loading in the third movie of that night you're going to watch.
Uh-huh.
That's fine. Maybe you're going to nuke it. Maybe you'll take it room temperature. That's fine. And maybe it's even a little fresher than that, but it is a review of Arrival, the new Denis Villeneuve movie starring Amy Adams and Jeremy Renner, among others. Planned to provide a review last week and couldn't get into the film.
Yeah.
It was sold
Which
out.
Which I was not expecting.
Two shows, half an hour apart, both sold out.
Uh-huh.
So excited to see what everybody was so excited about.
Uh-huh.
And we'll be talking about that later on the show. We also have some news. And, of course, it's Monday, so we're just doubling down on the movies. Our Craft to Services segment will continue today with us watching and talking about Where the Buffalo Roam, the 1980 movie about, loosely based on the life of Hunter S. Thompson, mm-hmm. the gonzo journalist, starring Bill Murray. And above Bill Murray, on the bill, Peter Boyle.
Yeah, well... You know, I mean, I almost feel like it's more about Laszlo than Thompson.
Think, yeah. Well, I think that's one reason.
Yeah.
And also, it's 1980. Like, what has Bill Murray been in? Not much at this point. He's still TV guy. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. So, that's the first and last time you're ever going to see something like that happen. But it is, he is there and he's playing not Oscar Acosta. He's playing a character based on Oscar Acosta.
Yes.
For very specific reasons that have to do with biker gangs and other reasons. And we'll get to that later on in the show.
Mm-hmm.
How you doing?
I am curious to see the new Harry Potter film, The Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them. I feel, and some of my friends are probably going to be upset to hear this, but I like Harry Potter. I don't love Harry Potter. I like the stories. I've read all the books in the original series.
It's not about Harry Potter.
No,
it's
I know
about
it's not.
Smoogie, Sloopy guy.
Yeah, exactly. It's his name is so memorable.
Augustus
something
Gluck.
Scamander.
No, that's
something Scamander. It sounds like salamander.
Yeah, you know what it sounds like. Don't send people to another podcast channel. It sounds like Jenny Nicholson, YouTube star Jenny Nicholson, who talks about Star Wars and stuff. It sounds like her making up Star Wars names.
Right.
You know, it's like Newt Scamander.
Yeah, exactly.
Jimmy Scrambles. okay, so but you're not pumped, huh? Because I'll tell you something. I'm in a boat that's like yours, but is sinking faster than yours in that I don't like it at all. I like the movies when they're good. Like Order of the Phoenix was probably one of my favorite movies of that year.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure where it is on the all-time thing, but it's just well-directed. It's exciting. It's fun. I don't care about Harry Potter at all.
Well,
but I actually I might be interested in a Harry Potter-esque movie that has nothing to do with that sniveling milksop Harry Potter.
Yeah, but here's the thing.
I might like Beat Takeshi Samander.
No. Yeah. No, you're combining things
already. It's got that cadence, though. It's a similar cadence.
No, I know. But it's like there's going to be like five of these films.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like, why?
All directed by the same guy.
Yeah.
Nice work.
I can't remember his name either. anyways.
Newt. It is Newt.
Yeah. It's Newt Scamander.
So wait. His first name's Newt. Mm-hmm. Newton, whatever. And his second, so he's first name amphibian, second name amphibian.
Sounds like an amphibian, yeah. Yep. And he's a Hufflepuff.
You like this stuff, huh? Oh, a Hufflepuff hero.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So they're, you know, trying to get
all right, you know what? I'm kind of into this now.
Okay. See, there you go.
Well, I'll tell you how it is.
Stop. I want to see it. I mean, I didn't rush out to the theaters and like see it. And I'm also just kind of like, there's so much hype around Harry Potter that there's like a part of me that's like, yeah, it's magical and it's fun, but is it really that great?
Do tell.
I think that it's fun and entertaining and everything, but I don't know, man.
Is it possible that it's for children?
Well,
and
yes.
So therefore it doesn't engage you intellectually.
Well, absolutely it is for children, but I have music guru Tara has already seen this, and she said that the film, it was obvious that it was geared more towards kids than the previous films, which I'm just kind of like, okay.
She's already seen Fantastic Beasts?
Yeah, well, it's already out.
Oh, that's right, it's out.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is it?
Yes, it is. Oh. Yes, it is.
Bad at my job.
No,
that's right, it's out. It's November.
Yes. So... want to see, but not as excited as some other Harry Potter fans are. So there you go.
Jimmy Scrambles. Let's talk about the news. Well, talking about things that you are probably less excited about than you should be, there's more news about the casting situation in the Han Solo spinoff movie. The Young Han Solo Adventures. George Lucas not involved with this one, though. And, of course, it was announced previously that Donald Glover would be playing Lando Calrissian.
Yes.
Because we need... Lando's got to be in this, right? How young are we talking here?
Young.
I mean, how young was Han Solo in the trilogy, in the original trilogy? You got the idea
I mean,
that he was
like in his 30s, right?
Well, the actor was, too.
Right. I don't know.
Yeah. Having an affair with a 19-year-old Carrie Fisher.
Stop.
Weird.
Yeah, I know.
Really weird. Well, it's about to get weirder. It looks like Emilia Clarke is joining the cast.
No, you told me this.
Yep. It's bad. It's bad news. She has been announced to, as far as I know, it's pretty much, you know, the deal is sealed. She'll be joining the cast along with Zoe Kravitz and Tessa Thompson, which two other actresses I could kind of take or leave, but... In between Donald Glover and the two of them, they've got color in this.
Yeah. You know,
they've got diversity in this, which is good news. And then they thought, we got three of those. We could have one transparent jellyfish of a human being, Emilia Clarke. She's very white.
Yes, she is.
Although that's not her real hair, though, on Game of Thrones.
No, it's not. Here's the thing with Emilia Clarke, and I'm not sure if I voiced this opinion on the show before or not, but... I feel like the part of Mother of Dragons, people give her like, oh, she's so great as Daenerys. Is she? It's just that she's got dragons and people always listen to her and she doesn't really have a whole lot to do.
Where it comes from is we'll see it when she begins interacting with all the other characters that we really love and have shown themselves to be really great in the main story in Westeros.
Mm-hmm.
When it's just Emilia's excellent adventure and bald guy comes up and he goes, I got your dragon. She's like, wow, they're going to kill you. Oh, you're dead. Oh, Grey Worm comes up. He's like, we don't have to do. You got to trust me. She just doesn't, she can play that one thing,
right.
I think, pretty good. But I think something like the Terminator movie proves, no, I mean, she's laughably bad.
She's not a good actress.
No, she's terrible.
I hate saying that. And we've talked about this before on the show. I mean, there's bad actors out there,
but,
too.
But also, it's you know, she just wants a job.
Yeah.
And I think it's... The director, it's casting, you know, it's her agents, you know, we got to get her in this film. It's not her fault that she was in that movie. Do you know what I mean? She just wants a job.
I understand that.
Even Jai Courtney, who blew me away that he could actually portray a character in Suicide Squad, was horrible in that. Everybody was bad in that.
That's true.
Because it was directed by a computer. And so I don't think she's great, but she does good as Daenerys Targaryen, Stormborn, Mother Dragons. So
maybe she'll just stay in
your lane. You know, stay in your lane. Yeah, there are people like Christian Bale who can just, you know, do everything, and then there's people like her who just, you know, just keep doing that. That's fine. So I don't know. We'll keep an eye on that. I wouldn't hold your breath for it to fall apart, though.
No,
it could.
I think it's gonna bulldoze forward.
Bulldoze forward.
Are they gonna come up with a better title than The Young Adventures of blah 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 blah?
Okay, so I'm glad you brought this up.
That's a working title.
That's a good question. It could be, but at the same time, I don't know. Have you seen the posters and a lot of the promotional stuff for Rogue One?
Here's what it says. I have.
Rogue One.
Yeah.
Like, they picked that title a while ago. They've stuck with it, and they have really not spent much, at least in terms of, I mean, I know they have TV ads, I know they got toys and all that, but it seems like they're going for a real bare bones kind of aesthetic.
Right.
Which is, you'd say, well, that's, you know, Star Wars. You know, the original Star Wars. But immediately they got the guy who paints the photorealistic things, and they knew they had what the selling point of Star Wars for some people might have been the monomyth, but for everybody else it's TIE fighters and lasers and stuff.
Yeah,
and they've never held back on that. But Rogue One, you've got one, you got two, I think, main characters that are droids, mm-hmm, that are probably going to walk away with the movie. Show them. You got Felicity Jones's little poonam there. Stick that on something.
Mads Mikkelsen.
Yeah, you got Mads Mikkelsen. You got Krennic, played by Ben Mendelsohn. Looks, you know, very visually interesting.
Uh-huh.
Rogue One.
Yeah.
Black. Not even stars. Just black poster. Rogue One.
Yep. Well, they're like, it's not a Gene brand. Whatever, man.
You know what I mean? It's a movie. I think you do have to sell this thing.
I don't think they do. No. Because it's Star Wars. It's coming out in December around Christmas. So they're like, screw you. It's Star Wars. People are going to come see it.
Yeah.
Let's not spend money on stuff we don't have to spend money on.
Exactly. I think that's probably, let's save cash. But I don't know if that's really going to work or not. Okay, so anyway, back to reality. Let's talk about Deadpool 2.
Yep.
Deadpool 2 lost Tim Miller as a director over disagreements with Ryan Reynolds, basically, but the production in general. And he has been replaced, now we know for sure, by David Leitch.
Okay.
David Leitch was the co-director of John Wick.
Okay.
It was actually directed by him and Chad Stahelski, who is a stuntman and film director.
Okay.
He is a stuntman, this David Leitch guy.
Uh-huh.
And an actor. If you look at his resume, he has a million credits as a stuntman.
Okay.
So he's done that.
He's
also been an actor on both film and TV. He's been a second unit director on a lot of films.
Okay.
Which, you know, this is sometimes how people rise in the ranks.
Sure.
Not usually, though. I wouldn't call him an auteur. He directed a movie with Charlize Theron and James McAvoy called The Coldest City.
Okay.
Which is like a spy-type movie, which I don't know anything about it except the blurb looks... I would kind of watch that, and I don't really like James McAvoy. We can talk about that in a second, too. And so he's going to direct Deadpool. And everybody is just shitting their pants, basically.
People are upset about it, I'm guessing?
Well, I am. And I guess as a representative of them, I'll tell you why.
Okay.
Bad news. I mean, you go, Tim Miller, first-time feature director.
Yeah.
He never directed a film.
Yeah.
But he did a lot of, I'm sure, second unit stuff and VFX, too. So he understood, because the VFX, his VFX were good. He wasn't a bad VFX designer and director. He understood how to make a film look like a film.
Yeah.
This guy has been on the wrong side of the camera for a long time. Now,
I see what you're saying.
That could give him the skill and ability to understand how to put a shot together. But all I'm saying is, with only John Wick to look at, a lot of people like John Wick. I didn't really like John Wick all that much, but a lot of people think it's really great. Those same people, I don't think are excited that he's doing Deadpool. So who knows at this point?
But did he help direct John Wick 2? I have to know.
He is a producer on John Wick 2, but he won't be directing John Wick. It's Chapter 2, by the way. And I think it's mostly because Stahelski is doing it himself. And so they're just splitting off now and like, all right, you take that one. I got the Deadpool.
Okay. All right. Why did they go this route? That's what I want to know.
Well, because they lost Tim Miller.
Yeah, I know they lost him, but is it that much harder to find a director if you're already like gearing up for production? Or?
Maybe they're going, they're like Disney, except they don't care if you have any accomplishments or not. Because we know that Disney hires directors who are up and coming to do their Marvel movies, but don't have any cachet so they can order them around. Mm-hmm. And Fox is like, screw it, just get some guy who's never made a movie before. I'm worried!
I mean, you kind of want somebody who has an idea what they're doing. Directorial wise,
What if Chad like had all the talent?
Yeah, we're screwed. I don't know. I mean, especially for Deadpool, because all the breaking of the fourth walls. I mean, I don't know.
All the fourth walls.
Coming down.
The best fourth walls. Well, let's talk some more movie news. It turns out, so remember The Crow?
I don't know
why you would. It was a long, long time ago. But anyway, they're still trying to get this Crow reboot made, and it had landed at Relativity Media. A film production company that's not been doing so well and basically went up for sale last month, probably like pre-bankruptcy. And so the production has moved on.
Of course it has.
It's moved on now because it might, because if they're not going to get it made, we got to pack up the old Bendel and get back out on the road again. And because of that, they might lose star Jason Momoa.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yep. It was rumored that Corin Hardy, the director, would be leaving as well, but I think he's going to stick with it. But I think Momoa might have to move on just...
because of other productions.
You
got
to get Aquaman
doing...
now. Yeah, like, the plan was to get him now.
Yeah.
Once he's making 10 movies for Warner Brothers, he ain't going to be the Crow no more. Also, no. There's just professional sort of considerations to take in. Do you want this guy to be two superheroes at the same time, in competing franchises?
Right. Right. That's also something else to consider.
Have you seen the original movie, The Crow?
I actually have not.
Why are we talking about this then?
I have not. I mean, I remember when it came out. And I remember it was a big deal. I just remember people talking about it. I think I was probably too young.
Well, you probably
remember
hearing that Brandon Lee was killed.
Yes, I do. But I think I was too young at the time to actually see the original films.
Yeah.
So I would like to, though. I just kind of feel like...
well, maybe someday, we can check it out for the show.
Maybe it's below 50% on Rotten Tomatoes. Is that what you're saying?
Well, if it is, then we can definitely do it on Craft of Services. But right. It's not. It's in the 80s, I believe.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. It's just hindsight. Uh-huh. We know that Rotten Tomatoes is a useless meter. And as Cargill says, it's killed criticism. And I don't disagree with him, but... it's fun to find movies that are quote unquote bad and talk about why they're bad.
Right.
Or why they're not bad.
And sometimes
we got a doozy today.
Yeah, I know. And sometimes when they're lovably bad, like they're so bad, they're actually kind of good.
Yes.
So those are the best ones. Those are the diamonds.
And we don't have any on the near horizon.
No.
That's not true. Everybody,
well, not today. Anyways.
Well, no. One of the first films we're talking about in December is Jingle All the Way. And I think your generation in particular probably really has a soft spot in their heart for that film.
I've actually never seen it.
Oh, these cookies are so good. Put the cookie down. One more story before we bounce out of the news. Vin Diesel, it has been rumored, or at least he has been publicly campaigning to play Black Bolt in a Marvel adaptation of The Inhumans, when they talked about The Inhumans being a film. Now that The Inhumans will not be a film, it will be a ABC TV show, it seems unlikely that he was going to do it.
That's not surprising, because he's not a TV star, he's a movie star.
Keeping James Gunn in this, because why not? He was asked in a recent Facebook Q&A, which is essentially just him flipping his phone on and going, okay, let's do it.
Right.
Somebody asked him if he would knew anything about Groot, Vin Diesel, playing Black Bolt. And I don't know why they asked him, except for the fact that
he's in
Groot.
Guardians,
Or... Black Bolt in Inhumans maybe fits into the cosmic side, which James Gunn seems to be the main guy to go to on.
Yeah.
And he said pretty much it's not really going to happen for that reason, because Vin is a big movie star, and why would he take a giant pay cut to play this character on television?
Right. I mean, I could see him ending up playing another superhero eventually, like in the Marvel Universe or DC even. So,
yeah.
I mean, I think that could be definitely in the cards.
Iron Giant 2.
There you go.
Iron Gianter. Also, why would you have him play a character who can't speak? As an actor,
I know.
He is famous for his physical presence.
And his voice.
Yes, he is famous for his basso
vocal
profundo
yes.
Voice. Yeah. So why cast him as a character who doesn't talk at all?
I know.
It'd be stupid.
I know.
There's a point in every human story where Black Bolt, who is a good guy, but he's often portrayed as having his own agenda. Namely to protect Adelon and the Inhumans. And of course he's gifted with this amazing ability that his voice has a destructive power that can level mountains and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And so there's a point usually in most stories where he is pushed to the breaking point and he employs...
Pushed too far.
Yeah, he employs his voice to destroy like something or whatever they're up against.
Mm-hmm.
And he usually does it by saying one word. And if Vin Diesel did play Black Bolt, we know what that word would be. Family. You said Rotten Tomatoes. You did. So I guess I'll say that 93% is where The Arrival is sitting on Rotten Tomatoes.
It's pretty fresh.
Yeah, it is a fresh new film that was released on the 11th, more than 12 days or so ago. And it is directed by Denis Villeneuve, that hot French star of directing things. He's really been on a roll recently. Pretty much everything that he's done in English has been fairly critically lauded. What movies? I'll tell you what films. He first started off doing a movie called Prisoners,
okay.
Which you might remember was starred Jake Gyllenhaal and Wolverine himself, Hugh Jackman. It's like a kidnapping drama. And he did another movie with Gyllenhaal called Enemy, which I watched and I don't remember if I talked about on the show or not.
I don't know if you did.
Maybe I will later. I don't know. He's done basically a film a year since 2013. He did Sicario, of course, last year.
Oh, I do love
which
Sicario.
Which we did talk about on the show a couple times. And then this this year and next year, of course, he is directing the Blade Runner reboot.
That's right.
And I will say about him that I don't know how to... he's only had a couple movies. I don't know how to compare him like as a director necessarily to other directors. Like, I can't judge his worth as a director. But it's clear that he has a visual aesthetic that he sort of commits to. And that is, I won't say foremost in his mind, but it's very important to him. And I think that he does that very well.
Mm-hmm.
All of his movies look great.
Sure.
And not just in that way. It's visually very rewarding.
Oh, it's such a beautiful film.
The visual touches that he puts on them usually go towards communicating something about the world of the film. Enemy is a great example of that. There's a lot of kind of weird stuff in Enemy, but it all is going towards whatever the point is. Now, what the point is, I don't know. I don't watch Enemy. You tell me. But it all works
open-ended.
Together. I have not seen Prisoners. I skipped it because I just didn't want to see another Give Me Back Boss Son and the Bobby. It didn't look interesting to me, but now I wish I checked it out, and I'm going to go back eventually. But this isn't that. This is Arrival.
Mm-hmm.
It is based on a short story called A Story of Your Life by sci-fi author Ted Chiang, who we have not had on the show, but
no.
I think we could get him.
Yeah, probably.
Maybe we'll get him and ask him if he's seen Arrival. And we're going to spoil stuff, right? We have to really talk about it.
Yeah, so if you want to see it, just...
Yeah. Jump forward to a time code that, I don't know, I'll put in later if I'm feeling like it. Maybe I'll put it in the show notes where it's safe to jump back in and hear about where the buffalo roam. But for now, we're going to spoil this film. And if you want the too long, didn't read version, I would say go see it.
Yeah.
It is visually interesting.
Oh, my gosh.
But other than that, your mileage may vary. So the movie revolves around a character named Louise Banks. She is a doctor of linguistics who is it's never really gotten into, but it seems like a college educator.
Yes.
And she is contacted by the military. It turns out that she has a security clearance, and they've used her to translate sensitive things in the past. They go and come find her because 12 strange objects, what we have think to be alien spaceships, have appeared in different places all over the planet.
Yeah.
And they need a linguist to go try and talk to these, at least the one that's on U.S. soil, which is in Montana. And so they take her, and they are joined by a theoretical physicist named Ian Donnelly.
Played by Jeremy Renner.
That's right. Yeah, they are collected by Colonel Weber, played by Forrest Whitaker.
Yeah.
And they are sent to try and talk to these aliens and figure out what's going on. And they can get some talking going on. They can do, 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 do. Do that.
Yep.
I'm surprised this movie didn't do that, because this movie has pretty much ripped off every touching, quote unquote, touching space movie from the last 30 years of American cinema.
You hear the quotation marks.
And maybe some foreign cinemas as well, but we'll get to that. And so it's basically, it's her quest to sort of figure out how to talk to these people, or aliens, or other people too. And we get these continuing sort of flashes of another story where she is a single mother who has lost a child.
Mm-hmm.
We see her
cancer.
Yeah. Well, it's a she says a really rare disease.
Yeah.
And so we see scenes of her raising, you know, her daughter, then her daughter passes away. We're to assume as a young woman, probably
yes.
16, 17, 18. And it's very tragic. And that's all going on while she is trying to figure out this stuff.
And it's unclear at the beginning if these are...
Well, you're giving it away right now.
Am I?
Yes, you are.
All right.
It is absolutely... it is insinuated that these are flashbacks.
Yes.
And they are not.
No.
They are flash forwards.
Yes.
Because she can see through time.
The aliens
like
have given
Lisa drinking
her the
water
gift.
On the Duff ride.
Yeah.
She can now see through time. And she is the lizard queen. She can do anything.
Stop.
And,
well, I think it's like the aliens kind of give her that gift
yes,
or something. That's kind of insinuated,
and that's,
too.
It's not insinuated. It is explicitly stated.
All right.
The movie refers to the Sapir-Whorf hypothesis, which, believe it or not, I think we actually have talked about previously on the show, which is a hypothesis by Sapir and Whorf. That part would have been easy to get.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Who hypothesized that the way you learn language and the language you learn affects the way you think in specific ways.
Yeah, I've heard. Yes, I think we definitely have talked
so
about this on the show.
So English, I don't, and I'm not a linguist or a expert on this or a brain theorist, but English versus maybe French versus Russian
or Japanese
or an Eastern
or,
language.
Yeah.
Exactly. Like an Eastern language where the structure of grammar, even the fact that they use pictograms
yes.
that don't necessarily, like that looks like a house, it's maybe house. Our letters and syntax aren't really pictograms. Long, long time ago, an A might have represented something that wasn't an A, but now
right.
it's just a phonetic sound.
Right.
So the way that you learn shapes your brain in a particular way.
I think what it's trying to say is that, well, during the midst, so the alien ships, the UFOs.
Well, I'm talking about the real world. You want to go
on? I want to talk about a little bit of both. So they land in 12 different areas around the world. And they're
which
trying...
Which are kind of stupid areas. just real quick.
Okay.
We established the whole movie is about the fact that the aliens can't speak our language.
Yep.
And I have a thing that I'm going to get to once you reveal some more stuff. And so they land in like 12 places. They make a joke about how they don't know why they landed there. But they land in the middle of the ocean. If you want to communicate with people, bad idea. They also land in Greenland. A quick scan will tell you there are not,
there are not
it's
that
the
many
least
people
populated
there.
Like large island like on Earth.
Yeah.
So why land there?
I don't know.
Dumb.
What I was going to say, I don't disagree
with
you.
I bet it's dumb.
Stop it. was that I think that, so while they're trying to figure out how to communicate with these aliens, they're also trying to communicate with these all these other locations of these ships, these 11 other places.
Yeah.
And, you know, hopefully try to work with each other.
Yeah, I wonder
even
where
though,
this is going.
What?
I wonder where this is going.
Well, hopefully try to work with each other. And then if you go back to that theory, then all these people that speak different languages, they, if you believe in that theory, their world is shaped differently and they think differently.
Right.
So how do you bridge those communication gaps? And how do you bridge the communication gaps between these aliens and humans?
Yeah.
And, you know, things can be misinterpreted and
right.
that's
and
dangerous.
They point out pretty early on, before, in my opinion, they completely just throw away any chance to really develop a lot of the things that they sort of start bringing up. But you've got Whitaker as the military guy, and he's not like a, oh my goodness, he's a big board. Like, he's not like, you know, totally bad, but he's very directed. He's like, I have a job. The job is to get some results. Whether we shoot them or whether we shake hands with them, I don't care. I have superiors that need something from me. And so he is pushing the eggheads, in this case, right, Jeremy Renner and Amy Adams, to get him results. And she says, you want it to happen a certain way, but we need to take time here. And she writes, like, what do you want to know? What's your purpose on Earth?
Mm-hmm.
And she breaks down, like, all the things that are hidden, all the layers of that sentence. Like,
yeah.
Do you understand that Earth means Earth? When we say you, do you know that we're talking about a collective you? Do you understand the idea of a purpose? You know, if you, does your language even understand, like, a directed question? Like,
right,
do you ask questions and,
right,
and respond to questions? That all gets chucked out the door, because later on she just talks to them and they're like, let me tell you about what's going on. They totally flush all that to pick up their stupid interstellar, less than stellar would be my joke name for this movie.
Right.
Love is the strongest thing in the universe and it transcends time and space plot that we're going to have to suffer through in every freaking space movie from now on is going to be about that. Thanks to freaking Anne Hathaway, isn't it? That's another one we could put on her tab.
Yeah. I think so.
So anyway, they go, they talk to these aliens. They figure out the aliens talk in circles. Also, she specifically says they don't. And this is actually like scientific, I think, even though it's a no brainer, is that here's how the aliens sound. And she's like, all right, look, we can't talk to them. That's, we can write things to them. Possibly. We're not going to be able to talk to them. That's not going to work.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have Truffaut playing the Moog on this one. It's not going to work. And except they ditch that later, and she just talks to them, and they're like, yeah, okay, here you go.
I know.
What?
And then there's, like, subtitles and stuff like that, and they're
yes!
like, what?
I know, at no point had they, and also, her, when they, in that scene where they're talking directly to her, and she's breathing their air, which I didn't think that she was supposed to be able to do.
No,
dumb,
I didn't think she was either.
They say, Luis, you gotta do this. You don't, if their language doesn't have a phonetic alphabet, which it doesn't, it just mm-hmm. has like concepts in these sort of rings, you can't say somebody's name then.
Uh-huh.
She would just be other, redhead other lady or whatever. You know, you can't make Luis without
right.
those phonetic sounds.
Uh-huh.
Sapir Whorf hypothesis. They quoted it.
Yes,
they're
they
the ones
did.
That went science on me.
Yes, they did.
Anything good about this film? It looks great.
Yeah, it looks great. It's just kind of disappointing in concept.
I'm being really mean. No, well, no, I think the concept is great. Like, I think what comes from the story is good. But all the other things they plug into it are so by rote. There's a couple soldiers that don't like this plan, and they're going to blow them up. Yeah,
yep.
I've seen Contact. Yep. I know
yep.
how that works.
Yep.
Did that.
And then I guess... they keep flashing back to the kid, and you think it's flashbacks, and then you find out that the kid's name is Hannah. The kid's like, why is my name Hannah? And I'm sitting there in my head, because it's a palindrome.
Screw you.
It's very same way for forwards and
yeah.
backwards, just like these flashback flash forwards. Oh my God.
Yeah. I think like I started to figure out that they were going to be flash forwards. Forget the fact that. And so there's a bunch of things that are inconsistent in this film. And as we talk about all the time on the show, they are things that are hidden from you only to trick you at the end.
To be revealed
yeah.
later.
They are things yeah. that would actually deepen the story, but you're holding them back from the audience just so you can getcha. You know, we can I gotcha at the end. Because Amy Adams, of the life of this woman, her young woman daughter, who almost reaches 20, doesn't age a day.
Mm-hmm.
Now, maybe they found out some alien science from all the language they got from the aliens
yeah.
to stop aging. But no, you didn't age her, because then we would know that she's getting older and she's not younger.
Yeah.
She's just 35-year-old Amy Adams
mm-hmm.
the whole movie.
Yeah.
Even though her husband, who we find out is Ian,
yeah.
Left you in one of the only things I thought was cool in the movie, which was she told him because Sapir, if anybody's listening and hasn't seen the movie still, because of the Sapir-Whorf hypothesis, and this is not how it works at all, hashtag not my Sapir-Whorf hypothesis, but learning the alien's language, which doesn't have any sense of time, suddenly allows you to see through time.
Apparently.
Well, that's not how anything works.
No.
But anyway, so she gets the ability to see through time. That's what's happening. She is getting information from the future and seeing her daughter's life from the future. And she says to, after she talks to the aliens, and she says to Jeremy Renner, she's like, oh, now I know why my husband divorced me. And she's like, he's like, you had a husband? At no point over the month you guys have been working together,
yeah,
did you
talk
you
about
that? You
probably
had conversations like that, but we didn't see them,
yeah,
because you would have said, no, I've never been married.
Right.
Come on, movie. It's lazy.
I know.
And so even though they got divorced when she told him, which I thought was cool, we're going to have this daughter and she's going to, I know she's going to die.
Yeah.
And he's like, why did you tell me that? In a scene that we don't see.
Yes.
Which might have been a good scene.
Yeah.
And then he leaves. She still would think about him.
Yeah.
She still would remember him.
I know.
But they only show him blurry and then he's into focus and, oh, 5 minutes left in the movie, it was Jeremy Renner the whole time.
I know.
It's not even a surprise at that point. We already know at that
exactly.
point.
Exactly.
So I'm just really disappointed. Like, when you think about, and I'm not going to say the time traveler's wife or anything like that, but if you think about a story that is told out of sequence...
Mm-hmm.
If they had not been so into this narrative about, let's find out what the aliens are, like all these other alien movies like Contact and Close Encounters and stuff, if they had committed early on to that out of sequence sort of storytelling, where
right.
we know there's something, there's some storyline going on with the daughter, there's a storyline with meeting aliens, there's maybe a storyline, a third one, some, and they all sort of fit together somehow. And then we realize that they're all being experienced in the mind of this woman who is in this... the central sort of timeline, you know, figuring out the
right.
alien thing, but we've got future and past flashes. It would have been a lot less mainstream, but that would have been way more interesting.
Well, and I think she has this line towards the end where she's talking to them about the alien
love
language.
Is the most,
okay. Well, stop. and that she says something along the lines that time is different for them. It's nonlinear. And then, like, that's when I knew. It's like... Well,
yeah.
Duh. And yeah, okay, that she chooses to love again and again, and it's just, it's a little cheesy. Yeah.
And speaking of stealing things, they Bill and Ted this. she gets the answer at the end from
yeah.
her future self, which is like, dude, we'll just go back in time and put the keys here later. Oh, look, here the keys are here. Why wouldn't she? She's at the party in the future. Where the Chinese, here's how we know this is a fiction. The
yeah.
Chinese general has just talked to the president. That ain't happening for 4 years.
No.
So she's at that party and he's like, here's my number and let me tell you this thing, which you should already know because you lived through the past when I told it to you.
Yeah.
It makes
you
it
called
seem,
me
it makes
and
it
you
seem
told
less
me
weird
this.
And it makes it seem more like a climax if he does it right then. But the fact is, that information is already caught in a loop. Like, we don't know where that information came from.
Right.
And it's, I don't know how she would portray that, like, yeah, I know what you said, or something. But if you're going to do time travel, then do it.
Yeah.
Don't around.
Don't just tiptoe around it.
Yeah. Like, you're already, we had people walking out going, that was really great. And I felt like some people were kind of going, I'm not really sure what happened, but I have to see it again. You have already confused people. You might as well make... The science in your science movie be self-consistent.
Mm-hmm. And it wasn't. It was a little...
A desire for more cows.
Yes. Do you want to talk about that at all?
No, I think I'm just going to make it the title of this episode. what is Denis Villeneuve's thing with spiders? In this case, Ted Chiang already wrote the story with
yes.
the aliens as heptapods. They were like seven-legged.
Sure.
That's another thing. Immediately, Jeremy Renner comes in. He goes, let's use math to talk to him. And they're like, all right, shut up, egghead. That's how we plan to talk to aliens right
yeah.
now. That's what we're sending out with SETI. We're not beaming them Blossom episodes. We're sending out mathematical, like pi and stuff.
Because
to show people. It's the universal language.
Yes, you don't need to know.
And immediately they tell him, no.
I know.
Did you think this was like Trees, the Warren Ellis comic that we reviewed?
I didn't.
In Trees,
really
alien
get
black,
that
charcoal black alien objects appear all over the world, and we need to figure out what they're doing there. And they send a lot of scientists to like check them out and study them.
I mean, I guess yeah. When you put it like that, it does sound very similar.
I mean, the story of your life was written in like 2000, so I guess Ellis would have been copying Chiang on this one. But still, I thought that was, I think Trees, if it ever like wraps up as a comic, could make a cool movie.
Sure.
Or a TV series, probably.
Yeah, no, I could see that for sure.
Yeah.
I guess I kind of just wanted more from this, and then I to me, it ended in a very cheesy and somewhat like, why didn't I see, or I saw this coming like the last 10, 15 minutes, you know, like it wasn't necessarily predictable throughout, but then it became very predictable.
Yeah.
And it was
just when they thought they were blowing your mind and you're just like, no, no, I know what's anything else.
It just, it was disappointing because I felt like, I feel like this movie had potential to really, like you said, I mean, really go somewhere, really do something. Like, if you're going to do time travel, really do time travel. And like,
and it also felt, I felt like they had a couple set pieces, not even visually, because it's a very, I like the fact that they didn't, there's no guns or bombs or showdowns with the aliens or anything. Like, it's a very talky movie. Like, I was fine with that.
Yeah.
But they had certain story sort of points that they just needed to get to, and they didn't know how to get there. There's a whole, there's a part where they, Amy Adams goes in and they try to communicate and they kind of have a breakthrough, and then montage, a month goes by and Jeremy Renner goes, we've been trying to figure out these aliens, but we don't really know. It has not to this point been a voiceover character. We just had bookends with Amy Adams in the film.
Yeah.
And I'm like, why not just dramatize some of those? Is that too slow? If this was like an 80s movie, this would be where we settle in and they're talking to the chimp or the caveman or whatever it is. And we have a series of scenes where we make a breakthrough.
Yeah.
And in the meantime, and she and Jeremy Renner get closer and closer, and we can't have that because then we'll understand that he's the husband the whole time. I noticed that in the last couple scenes, he grabs her arm like five times because now they have to really push and rush this intimacy between them that they haven't shown any time expanding at all because we can't let people know. Why not people let people know? This whole movie is about knowing what's going to happen.
Yeah.
So why not be brave enough to just basically tell us what's going to happen?
But we don't know how it's going to happen.
No, exactly how.
Right.
And then dramatize that.
Yeah.
But the movie is, it doesn't agree with its own theme, which is that things are worth experiencing even when you know how they're going to turn out.
Yeah.
Which is a good theme. But this movie doesn't even cleave to that. It just tries to trick you left and right, and it's dumb. Any good things? What good things before we wrap this up?
I feel like when they... I like this, and yet there's a part of me that's like, okay. I think that they had a good pace, and I think it was really cool them showing them going up into the ship the first time.
Yeah.
And then, like, seeing how gravity was, like, different.
Yep. And it, yep, and that took a long,
it did
long
take
time.
A very long time.
It was very neat, and I almost was bored.
Yeah,
it was,
I know.
Like, this is neat, but I'm wondering if there's going to be anything else. And that sort of fascination with the otherness of these aliens is just dropped for this conventional sort of plot that's like wishes it was The Abyss. I call it The Abyss Between the Writer's Ears.
No.
It was written by Eric Heisserer, or at least the screenplay was. Guess what else he's written?
What else has he written? Nothing?
Final Destination 5.
Oh, boy.
The Thing reboot.
Okay.
Ours, a Paul Walker movie that he directed as well.
Hmm.
And Lights Out, which is a movie that's out right now. It's a horror movie about how the monsters are destroyed by light, but it's dumb.
Okay, so, yeah.
So if you're Denis Villeneuve and the studio gives you Eric Heisserer, do you just go, I'm going to do what I can. I'm just going to, right? Like, this is not.
I guess you do. I mean.
It's too bad. If I was him, I'd be really disappointed. It's like, where is the Robert Town or whatever? Like, come on. I've got the talent. I've got the.
Yes.
They've given me the money for this thing. And I got the guy who wrote the Friday the 13th or Nightmare on Elm Street remake a couple years ago.
Yeah. I do think that Amy Adams did a pretty good job.
Yeah, but she always does.
Yeah, I know.
I really want to see Nocturnal Animals.
Oh my God, that looks really, really good.
Yeah. Well, it looks
terrifying.
Really cheesy. It looks like...
Really?
Well, it's because it's a thriller. It's like, you done me wrong. And there's this part where she's like, we're going to live to regret this. I'm like... So I know it's directed by Tom Ford. Was it written? Oh, yeah, it was written by Tom Ford. So I'm not sure that his strength as a writer is going to match his strength as a director. But it looks like a trashy movie that's got some cachet and that you can kind of get behind.
You know, and I really...
Because people watch something like Wild Things, you know, from back in the 90s with Bill Murray. And they're like, no, it's, you know, it's just trashy. It's just fun. It's like, yeah, but parts of it are so bad. It's hard to really just sign off on it.
Yeah.
And this looks like it's going to be trashy, but like really well acted and really well shot. And
And, you know, I really like Jake Gyllenhaal.
Like the counselor was supposed to be.
Yeah. Not good.
I don't know. I've got more.
Any good things from you,
I've got more nicknames for movies to make fun of it, but okay. I'm going to probably just skip those. There's a part where she gets into the gravity thing, and I guess she's supposed to be in like zero G or something, and so her hair is floating. It was a good idea from them, but it looks like crap. They should have just had her wear a hat or something like they do with Sandra Bullock in Gravity. Like they tried to render her hair, and all you can do is just look at the terrible aughts level video game technology, like floating hair. It does not look good.
It was very bright in that sequence as well. So bright, I could see the seams in the screen.
Yeah, which there was a lot of that.
I don't feel like is a good thing. I don't want to be. I don't want to be reminded that I'm watching a film while I'm watching a film.
Yeah,
let me be immersed.
I would say I am right. I'm 50%. 50.0000001% recommend this film simply because I want to see more films like this. We had a lot of films like this back in the day that we just don't get anymore. For you know, passed over for Transformers or even like you know, gun movies like The Matrix or whatever. So we need more movies like this.
Yeah, we do.
You want to send a message that we you know we like this Villeneuve guy. He's won me over at this point. And Amy Adams too. Sure, let's keep having her and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Jeremy Renner, yeah, why not? He's along for the ride. But other than that, like no. But we could talk about the previews though, because they were amazing.
They were amazing. Yeah.
You want to talk about Split? which I've when I heard that. I think he just makes them in secret now, so nobody knows about them. When I heard there was a new M. Night movie, I was like, oh boy. And then I heard that people are like, oh, this is a return to form. And I'm like, okay. People like The Visit, even though I think The Visit was ridiculous. So what's he done here? Didn't know much about it. Saw the thing.
I think you need to explain because you're bursting.
So. James McAvoy. Cinema cyanide, as far as I'm concerned. Plays a kiss the girls type killer who kidnaps some girls, but it turns out he's got 27 different multiple personalities, and so they have to. This is like adaptation. This is like the script that his brother, like his crappy can't write brother, would come up with. So the girls that he kidnaps, none of whom I recognize,
no,
have to negotiate with the different personalities to get out of the thing, and it's just like, this is your return to form.
Yeah. I know. And it
was this the one that featured a bad cover of a... There's a trend now where, hey, do a shitty cover of a classic song.
Yep.
Slow it way down and put it in your movie.
And it's terrifying.
It's awful.
And I don't know if it started with Sucker Punch or what, but I
Enjoy the Silence
it.
Cover for the Ghost in the Shell trailer is terrible. How did you slow down and make more depressing a Depeche Mode song?
I don't know.
That congratulations, sir.
I mean, is that an accomplishment? I think it's terrible.
I don't know. And we saw this trailer for this movie, A Cure for Wellness,
yes,
which actually looks like it could be a really cool movie.
It could.
But they have this like slowed down...
It's so terrible. It's a very slowed down, like depressing sounding. I want to be sedated.
Yeah, I know.
Which is like super upbeat.
So
you
glad
know?
That
it's like
the
what?
Cure or the Cure, sorry, the Clash. Hey, one word starts with C. Yeah, is not around to see this.
Yeah,
but yeah, I just don't even know what it's for. We must have seen 7 trailers.
We saw a ton.
We saw the Requisite Passengers trailer. You can't get out unless you see that.
Yep.
And we saw the Space Between Us, which is like kind of a fun twist on YA. We've seen this a million times.
Yep.
Sick kid falls in love with a girl and he can't come out of his bubble.
Right.
Or in this case, he can't come to Earth from Mars. And Gary Oldman is just cashing a paycheck,
yep.
But doing it in style.
Yep.
Oh, boy. And then, of course, there's what I call Mr. and Mrs. Smith, World War II style, where Brad Pitt and Marion Cotillard get married and have a baby. Right. Right.
Yep.
I know they want to work with Zemeckis. He wants to work with them, but aren't they a little old for this storyline? And so they're both like spies, but then it turns out that she might be like a double agent, and so he's got to decide whether he's going to kill her or not. I don't see that really turning into anything really worth watching.
No.
I mean, it's a good premise, I guess. But
I guess.
We've seen it before.
Yeah, I feel like we have.
And Zemeckis, is it even, he probably going to use a ton of CGI to make them look younger. Like, that's how he's pulling that off, because it's Robert Zemeckis. Still. Split.
Yeah. No.
Coming out in January. No, like all good movies.
Yeah. Here's the thing. I heard people next to us like turn to each other and say, "Oh, we got to see that."
No, you did. I heard people behind us laughing. No. I heard people behind us laughing at the jokes I was making about it.
No, I seriously heard them say that. And it's like, how do you...
There was
like,
no audible boo when M. Night's name came up. But I will say, it was probably the shortest like director sort of blurb card I've ever seen.
Yeah,
like,
it was pretty short.
This whole movie's coming on, and they're like, imagine how much it comes off.
I know, but it the thing
and
that
they
was
didn't
like
show his name again at the end.
No, they didn't.
Yeah.
Okay, I know you want to do a scary movie. This guy is unhinged and he's schizophrenic, but it's like you're not really. You are not dealing with this in a sensitive way at all.
No.
And then James McAvoy.
Also, it's not called multiple personality. I don't know when this is set.
No.
There's a 2017 minivan that the girls get kidnapped out of or whatever. So,
right.
Yeah, it's not. It's dissociative identity disorder. And
right.
We're not even sure about the science on that.
Right. But, I mean, and then, like, his portrayals. I'm sorry. Sometimes I want to laugh.
Screw science. Because the old lady says that your body's your chemistry can change due to your mental state. And I'm like, no, it can't. And so that leads us into he's one of his personalities is the beast. And the more he thinks about being the beast, his body literally becomes like a monster.
Yeah.
Did we need that?
I don't think
Wasn't
so.
Wasn't it already psychological enough?
Yes. Yes, it was. I do not care to see that.
Arrival is in theaters right now. At the end, it said Arrival. And I was like, Departure. Credits are rolling. Departure. Okay, I don't regret the creation of Craft DeServices as a segment, but
here we go.
There are times I doubt. I doubt what we have done.
Yep.
Sometimes
I question what we have done as well because I'm like, why have we created this thing to torture ourselves?
I don't often, actually, this is not necessarily true, but I don't often find myself getting very angry at movies that I chose to watch. Often friends of friends are going to a film and it's like, we're going to go see something, something. It's like, well, I wouldn't have chosen to see that.
But I
wanna hang out. Because I'm going with the group.
Yeah.
And often I get mad, just physically angry, like the guy in Split, about those films. But when I sit down and go, I'm going to watch this, that's not the usual response.
Right.
I was very angry after watching this film.
Had you seen this film before?
I had not seen it. Okay. No. I had not seen it before. The film we're talking about is Where the Buffalo Roam, the 1980 film starring Bill Murray, and it is based pretty loosely on the life of Hunter S. Thompson. Now, when I saw that it was 17% on Rotten Tomatoes, I thought, I'll take that challenge. Why not? We've been in worse situations.
Yeah.
For sure.
I feel like we have.
Dungeons and Dragons, the movie.
Pretty bad.
Not great?
No.
I wouldn't put that on Voyager to let aliens find it.
No. But, I wouldn't either.
Yeah. But this movie thought, let's give it a shot. Boy. It also stars Peter Boyle he's Carl Laszlo Esquire,
yes,
in this, but the character is based on Chicano activist and Thompson's former friend and attorney, Oscar Zeta Acosta.
Right.
Who disappeared in 1974, just like it says in the film. We don't know what happened. He hasn't come back, so we can assume that he's dead. If the real Acosta was getting into the things that Laszlo was getting into in this film, we know what happened to him.
Yeah.
Like, it's a lot of dangerous kind of stuff. But basically, if you don't know, now you know. Hunter S. Thompson is a journalist working for Rolling Stone in the real world, a Blast magazine in this movie. Bruno Kirby is his boss, who is playing basically Jan Wenner from Rolling Stone. Turtlenecks and all.
Uh-huh.
And so he's writing these gonzo journalist sort of articles. And what is gonzo journalism? I don't know. Hunter didn't do a lot to define it. But it's basically seen as journalism where you kind of involve yourself in what's going on. And the story becomes as much your experience in the world of what you're writing about. He got his first big break, Thompson, writing about the Hells Angels.
Right.
By going and like riding with them. And so that amongst him following the campaign trail in 72, covering the Super Bowl in 72.
Yeah.
And he came up with this sort of overarching like tagline, which is fear and loathing, and then he just applies fear and loathing to whatever it was,
right?
Like fear and loathing in Las Vegas was his famous recounting of him going to this like ATF sort of convention in Vegas, and,
sure.
and also covering the giant motorcycle race or whatever it is. This doesn't do that,
no,
and I'm not sure why. I think it's probably because of rights. I think Fear and Loathing had already been optioned, so when the time came to make a film about Bill Murray, I mean, Hunter S. Thompson,
yeah.
They didn't have a lot left. And so this is based on the obituary that
yes.
Thompson wrote for Acosta called The Banshee Screams for Buffalo Meat.
Yep.
I'm just going to pause on that. I think it's called that because Acosta wrote a book called The Autobiography of a Brown Buffalo, which was... It was a novel, but it is essentially based on his life at being an activist lawyer in the 60s.
Sure.
Speaking of people who are not qualified to do what they're going to do, sorry to the director of Deadpool 2. But it was directed by Art Linson. This is the first movie that he ever directed. He has gone on to produce many famous, successful, and memorable films.
Sure.
Fight Club, The Untouchables, Heat, Fast Times at Ridgemont High.
Sure.
Like, the guy's a player.
Yeah.
But he decided to play as a director.
And maybe that's not his strongest suit.
And only directed two films and went, oh, no, no, I'm not going to do this. And he reportedly, before filming began, he took like a 4-month crash course in directing.
So it's I read that too.
Okay, so you're not a director then. Why are you directing this?
He really wanted to direct this.
The only other movie that he had directed was called The Wildlife in 1984. It was one of Cameron Crowe's first movies that he wrote. And it stars Eric Stoltz, amongst other people. So... That tells you all you need to know.
All right.
So anyway, yeah, he directed it. It was written by John Kay. What has John Kay written?
Probably not much.
American Hot Wax and Rafferty and the Gold Dust Twins.
Okay. I haven't heard of either of those.
Two kind of low-budget B movies, and then this. And he didn't really direct or write anything after this. And you can see why.
The script was
notoriously weak.
Yes. And so... on Wikipedia, it was talking about how Hunter S. Thompson like sold the rights to the obituary because he didn't think anything would be done with it because
right.
the rights have been sold for Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas for a while
right.
and have been optioned for a couple of movies and nothing happened. And then all of a sudden,
it was just like more bullets
yeah.
and ether.
Yeah. And then all of a sudden, like he found out that they were... doing it.
Art Linson got a wild hair up his ass.
And he was like,
made.
Oh crap. And like he realized he'd signed pretty much all of his rights away. So he was like on as like somebody to give some guidance like on the set and everything. But
yeah.
he didn't really give a hand in writing it. And
no,
later
he said, or at least his excuse was, it's not my fault because I don't have any
right.
control. But
right.
then you hear all the stories about all the time that he spent on the set. And I'm sure they were happy to have him on the set.
Yeah.
And Bill Murray was famously didn't really want to shoot the movie or at least start because the script wasn't ready. And when a guy like Bill Murray, who probably ad-libs most of his dialogue, says the script isn't it's not good enough, that's not good enough.
Yep.
And so he and Hunter Thompson apparently came up with a lot of the dialogue or a lot of Murray's reactions to things just organically.
Well, and Murray supposedly spent a lot of time with Thompson, like giving him like things to like how to talk like him or
yeah.
act like him and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And then when he went back to shoot the fifth season of SNL, like people were like, yeah, he was different.
He was a real jerk.
He came back and it was like he was so immersed in being Hunter S. Thompson. And he says that there's still a little bit of Thompson in him.
Yeah. And I think it also just gave him like an excuse to act like a jerk because
that could be
Belushi, and Chevy Chase, I think, and both left the show at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And Murray was the guy that was kind of still hanging around. This is pre Stripes and pre-Ghostbusters and stuff. And so he was probably jealous and kind of resentful. And being Hunter gave him a chance to be...
Let
it out. Yeah. But I did hear that later in the season. And then after that, like, he kind of calmed down. And that was actually... The fifth season of SNL was a big season for him. That's, like, kind of where he started to really break out. And then, of course, got off the show and had a huge movie career. But... Yeah, a little bit of Hunter in him. I can see it.
Yeah, and it has been criticized as being, like, there's the plot is not great. The writing is
pretty
weak. Yes.
There's this frame story where we join Thompson. Yeah. And it never tells you what year it is, but it must be 74 because that's when he wrote the Bells That Screams for Buffalo Meat.
Yeah.
It's based on the obituary. Yeah. So it opens in this frame story where he's at his lodge or whatever in Colorado, screwing around with his dog in a bunch of bits that probably were came up with on the day.
Yep.
And aren't really
that great.
Seem like it.
Yeah.
And they're demanding his story. And so that must be the story, right? So I guess it's 74, which when you think about it, was only 6 years before the movie came out.
Yeah.
This is hardly a period piece for the people that are making this.
Mm-mm.
Which is why it's so interesting to see 1997's Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas, made by Terry Gilliam, later.
Yeah.
Which does a lot. Now that I've seen them both, they totally reference, not clearly, I mean, you know, it's Hunter S. Thompson, his life. But I think they are referencing the first movie specifically in places in Fear and Loathing. But then again, that's a movie that where Johnny Depp as Hunter S. Thompson runs into Hunter S. Thompson. So all bets are off.
Yeah,
I bet they asked Bill Murray to, like, do a thing, too. Like, probably. Do you want to do a thing where he, like, runs into you? He's probably like...
Nah, I'm good.
Late 90s Bill Murray was not your best Bill Murray.
No.
But yeah, it opens with him doing that, and then it closes there, too. And it closes with, like, something that Thompson said, but after you watch this movie that completely misunderstands his impact and his legacy, and really, like... what was happening in America at the time, why we had, how the churning primordial sea of what we had going on and socially gave birth to a Hunter S. Thompson.
Right.
Like the Matrix giving birth to a Neo, to a One. Skipped all that and just had one of his quotes where it's just not weird enough for me, man.
Yep. And it's like, okay.
Dumb.
And I feel like, and maybe this is because it's... based on the obituary, that it really focused more on Laszlo than on Thompson.
Yeah.
But it's weird, too, because it's like, well, clearly not big fans of Nixon.
No. They do have a scene from what I assume was Fear and Loathing on the Campaign Trail, where he dresses up as, he gets the guy from the Washington Post stoned, played by... Odo from DS9 and takes his clothes and then he manages to get into a bathroom where the president is coming through and has this interaction with him about all the screwheads and the scum of society or whatever, which doesn't really go anywhere.
No.
I don't know if that actually happened or not. I could see it happening, but I know one thing. I know that it was homaged or referenced in Transmetropolitan when Spider goes to the conference and the president is there, the Beast, and he catches him in the bathroom. And in the film, Nixon just takes a long time to pee, although it seems like he's really uncomfortable.
Yeah, I can't tell if, like, maybe his prostate is swollen.
Well,
or...
in the Transmetropolitan, he has it like the guy's like, Australian hookers, give me the... Yeah, so...
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Anyway.
We'll call him
too long. Too long.
Nothing.
Read some of it. That would be my review of this film. Just read Transmetropolitan.
Okay.
It is a much better adaptation of the life of
Hunter S. Thompson.
Or a Hunter S. Thompson-esque figure.
Sure.
Yeah, but otherwise, it's all just sort of a bunch of comedic set pieces that don't ever really pan out.
They're like scenes that are very loosely tied together.
And he acts ridiculously, much like Johnny Depp's version of the character does.
Mm-hmm.
He gets a hotel room for the Super Bowl, which he doesn't even plan to. He's writing his, like, the article without even having gone.
Yeah.
And then he gets the wait staff to come in and he plays, like, football with them.
Yeah.
And then eventually abandons the hotel room. He gives his tickets to these guys that are down the street. And they're like, tickets and a hotel room key? Whoa. And so when his boss calls later, there's just, like, this full-on party going on.
Yep.
And then, of course, he's like, Hunter!
Yeah.
But nothing ever really comes out of that or anything.
And then he's pretty much gone from the movie after that. Yep. His boss was, we don't see him anymore.
And Oscar shows up and it turns out that he's at the beginning of the movie, he is a human rights lawyer.
Yep.
Who's trying to, you know, get these kids. Kids are getting busted for pot. They're getting
ridiculous sentences.
Yeah, 10 years for possession.
Yeah.
And so he is trying to jam up the system and like keep these kids from getting long prison terms. And that's kind of what Hunter is. They're kind of a team. Like, he acts crazy and blocks up the courts, and then Hunter gets a good story about his work. And it seems like that bubbles burst because the court doesn't take him serious anymore. He can't keep these kids from getting these long sentences. And then he kind of goes off the deep end, and we see him again, and he is trying to start like his own militia, and he's buying and selling guns. And Hunter's like, yeah, I don't know. I didn't sign up for this.
Yeah, Hunter doesn't want really anything to do with it.
No.
So it's like kind of like they kind of like start parting ways in a way.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
And then like Laszlo just has this way of finding him. So like he's on this press junket.
Yeah. Well, he's more a spiritual figure than a real person.
Yeah, I know. And like it has a way of finding him on the plane that the president is on. And of course, there's one open seat right next to him.
Yeah. Right. And he gets him kicked off.
Yeah. And he seems like he's kind of pissed at him. Like he seems like, dude, I don't, it's like he doesn't want to, it's like Hunter doesn't want to play anymore. And Laszlo's just getting in his face like, come on, let's play ball, let's do this.
Yeah, but I thought it hadn't got weird enough for you.
Yeah. It just doesn't seem like a movie. I don't know what it is. It seems very unfinished.
Yeah.
And I think Bill Murray did a great job portraying the character. I just don't think
he was pretty good.
There was much to the story, and I think the writing was really lacking. Yeah. And
there's times when you watch like Fear and Loathing 97 where I forget that I'm watching Johnny Depp.
Yes.
And you never forget that you're watching Bill Murray, but he does a lot more than just being Bill Murray in a movie like he usually is.
Yes.
Like he works on it.
Yeah, he does.
But otherwise, boy, I have a lot to say about this film, even though we're basically done. That was it. Like it's like 99 minutes. It's not that long.
No, it feels longer than it is.
But having to do with, first of all, let me just say real quick, this fits completely in with my music, my song title, movie name theory.
Okay.
Which is that every movie that shares a title with a song sucks.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
That's a little harsh to Delirious, which we reviewed last week.
No, I don't think it is.
But it's not great. Can't Buy Me Love. You name it. It's probably not going to be a good movie. And this fits
Stand
right
by
in.
Me is a good movie. Mm. Wow. Wow.
I don't think that you're necessarily wrong.
Okay.
But the short story is not, it's named something different.
Sure.
Want to See a Dead Body or something like that. I can't remember what it's called. It's not isn't called
it,
Stand By Me.
Isn't it just like The Body?
The
or
Body.
Something like that?
Oh, look at Stephen. Hey, everybody. It's PhD Stephen King.
Student
here. Can she talk to the Stephen King aliens? I don't know. I'm sure there'd be some kind of contrivance that is then explained within an inch of its life by the main character. Rant off. And this fits right into that. And also, it's got, so you've got Where the Buffalo Roam. We got to make sure that's in the opening credits because we paid for that. And then the rest of the movie is actually scored by Neil Young.
Yeah.
Who I think at this point would have done anything. Like, he is reclaimed. He's reclaimed. He's always sort of had his reputation as like a counterculture sort of figure. But Coke is expensive. You know what I mean? And so I think that.
He
probably
was, like,
signed
just
on thinking,
check.
Yeah, I remember that guy. He was cool.
Sure.
I'll do this. And that leads me to my next point, which is, we've said it before, they don't know what they're doing.
Uh-huh.
When it's 60s night at the student union, and you know, and you're in college,
yes.
It's like, hey, come dressed up like the 60s. Everybody comes with their fro wigs, you know, and their platform shoes or whatever, and they're like, woo, peace signs, stuff like that. Nobody comes as like Stokely Carmichael or something like that. Do you know what I mean? Like, everybody enjoys taking, you know, the fashion and the look and just going right over why we have those fashions, why we have why we think of that as a thing.
Right.
And I think that Hunter S. Thompson, yeah, right, we've already said that he didn't have any connection to it either. There's nothing he could have done. But he was around.
He did not like this around. Movie, though.
And I think back then, in 1980 at least, even he had bought into his own press. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So whereas they could have taken a chance, like I think that the 97 movie does really well, and I hope it's 97, it might be 98, but I'm just, you know what I mean, the yes. 90s one, is to show you all the goofy stuff and cutting the grapefruits with the knife and all that, but telling the story, making the point that Thompson was trying to make when he wrote Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas is right. that we are losing this battle. We have already lost it.
Mm-hmm.
The wave has broken and rolling back, and I don't know what we're going to do now. It is very poignant, especially considering current events.
Yep.
And that's, I think, why I got so mad when I saw them. And it's not like I think that he is a saint or that his work is like is a holy, you know, relic or anything like that.
Right.
But at least he was asking questions that not enough people are asking now and taking seriously. I wish that he was alive now. If he was alive, he'd kill himself again probably.
Stop.
Now. Because we need him now.
Yeah.
Because he can throw shots at the palace in a way. There's a reason that he involved himself, and there's a reason that he made himself, I think, a ridiculous person. Is because when you are a ridiculous person, there's nowhere to go in terms of criticizing you.
That's true.
If you have a candidate who doesn't respect women, so much so that he doesn't even... It's not like he hates you. He's never even thought of you as a real person.
Yeah.
So no matter how right you are morally, no matter what points you make, no matter how many people support you, all you have to do is go, nasty woman, and then you don't even think about it. You're not right. even affected or cowed by that.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying that it's just that, and I'm not saying that he would even respect Hunter Thompson, but when he would try to say something, what can you say about Hunter S. Thompson? He is a jester. He has already lowered yeah. himself as low as you can go.
Yes.
And that makes it extremely effective to criticize authority, as anybody who's ever done a cartwheel in a throne room in the Middle Ages can tell you. We don't have anybody like that.
Yeah.
People like Rachel Maddow, like Gloria Vanderbilt's kid, they have this air of professionalism that they have to maintain.
Yeah.
And Hunter never needed that. He could do and say whatever he had to point out the ridiculousness and the hypocrisy and the just of these figures.
Yes.
We don't have that anymore. He's gone.
No.
Because after Bush was elected the second time, he said, yeah, I don't want to stick around for the rest of it.
Stop.
It's true, but I wish he had.
Yeah.
I wish he had.
I know. The fool or the jester is often the most wise.
Oh, you're going with the Tears of the Clown type thing?
No.
Another movie that wouldn't be good.
No, I'm not. I'm just saying, like, the... Look at the fool and like Shakespeare's plays and everything often is very wise beyond his years.
Yeah.
Well,
he's the one who can say that there's a reason that the fool disappears from the second half of King Lear.
Yeah.
Because that character is not taking advice at this point.
Yes.
He says a lot of really poignant things, but we don't need that guy anymore because yeah. if anybody listened to him, we wouldn't end up where we were.
That's true.
So he's got to go.
Yep.
And many productions stage a thing where it doesn't say what happens to him in the text, but he hangs himself basically.
Okay.
It's dark.
It's a dark show.
Yeah.
It's a really, really dark show.
And and just to the commoditization of the celebrity of Hunter Thompson, they show him speaking out of college, as he did, and everybody's chanting, Gonzo, Gonzo, Gonzo. And all it does is just present it. It doesn't, I'm not saying that you need to get heavy-handed in your commentary, but it doesn't try to show that he has lost something or he has been seduced. You know, he's reading his own press, basically, by... being he has been seduced by his own celebrity.
Mm-hmm.
He's not telling these kids anything important.
No.
Some of these kids have important questions, and maybe we have a scene where we see him sort of fail to satisfy what they want from him, you know,
right.
or to give them good advice. He's done all this stuff to his body. He's done all this stuff to his mind. He's put himself in danger. And what has he really learned? He's not sure.
No.
But this movie is not about his legacy in the way I think Fear and Loathing is.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, and it's got Gary Busey in it.
Yeah.
So would you recommend this film?
I sadly would not recommend this film. I if you want to watch a film that is loosely based on Hunter S. Thompson's life, even somewhat, I would recommend that you watch Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas instead.
Yeah. I would really suggest that you have to, if you want to see Bill Murray do Hunter S. Thompson, I think there's probably a skit or two on SNL if you've got some of the classic probably. Ones you could find. There's probably YouTube clips. Just watch those.
Yeah.
But in terms of this film, there's really little to recommend it. The director has no idea what he's doing.
No.
Many scenes, although have a long runtime, which I think is cool, that just means that he didn't know how or when to cut.
Yep.
Or what to cut or you know, coverage and stuff like that. That original scene where he's in the sanitarium, I think, room?
Yes.
With the nurse?
Yeah.
Just plays out with like three walls like it's, you know, on a soundstage or let's like
yeah,
on a,
you're right.
On
it's
a
not
play set.
Cut with like different angles
no,
or anything.
Not until, yeah, not until later on in it. So technically it fails. And I just think everybody involved just loses the plot as to what the story is that they're trying
I
to tell.
I also thought it was weird, too, when the doctor and another nurse come into the room and are saying, oh, you need to get out of here, blah, blah, blah. And like they see the nurse, like, obviously ridiculously high, her shirt unbuttoned, you know, just laying on the, she doesn't get reprimanded at all.
Well, it's not her story though.
I know it's not, but it's like, obviously you would be upset about it. It just, it doesn't, what, I guess what I'm trying to say is it's a story that tries to like tether itself to the real world and yet it doesn't live by the real world's rules.
Right.
And I think that is part of the dissonance of this film, because you need to decide whether you are going to be as ridiculous as Hunter S. Thompson is portrayed and the whole world is crazy, or is he just being the fool and
yeah.
the world is the same?
Yeah. And you don't even have the excuse really, because there is drug use in this movie, but they actually don't make a really big deal out of it.
They make it very commonplace. I mean, the one scene that was very funny
but, yeah.
was when he is driving away from the sanitarium, Hunter S. is, and Laszlo is in the car with him, and he is typing on the typewriter as he drives.
Yeah.
And Laszlo is like,
goofy.
Are you sure you got that?
It's
and
so
he's
crazy.
Like, oh, yeah.
Yeah. But there, you don't even have the excuse of them taking like hallucinogenics or psychedelics and seeing dinosaurs like screw on the floor of the casino and stuff like that.
Nope. No, you don't.
Which is, that's a way to go.
Yeah, it is a way to go, for sure.
Where the buffalo roam.
Don't now take our word for it.
And now I'm going to start looking ahead to make sure that the films are not named after songs, because, like I said, I feel like we always get in trouble when something like that happens.
Well, I mean, two in a row when they're named after songs and then the songs play in the opening credits. That's, I'm just saying.
Yes. Well, let's raise the brow is so low it's scraping the ground. Let's raise it. Let's raise it all the way up.
All right.
And next time on Craft of Services, that'll be a week from now, we're going to watch a movie with artistic aspirations.
Ooh.
By a director who disappeared from Hollywood for a long time and then came back. And that's something that we'll talk about. But the movie is Knight of Cups, directed by Terrence Malick.
All right.
And it stars Christian Bale and some women.
Wow.
Well, should I mention them? I could, but the point is that, like most of Terrence Malick's films, again, very excited to be doing this film, it's about a guy who thinks a lot, definitely talks to himself in voiceover quite a bit, and then his life is like affected by all these women. And I'm like, didn't that go out with 8.5? Like, aren't we done with that?
No, because Terrence
but still,
just,
men
Terrence
just
Malick
run everything. Yeah,
do.
And so yeah, that's it. Christian Bale's going to wander around L.A. and he's going to think about all the women in his life.
Okay.
Look, he's a writer. That's
try to sell it to me. Come on.
He's a writer. That's why we did it. The Craft of Services for the month of November is supposed to be about creators and writers. And we did talk about that in terms of Hunter S. Thompson and what he did and how they tried to reproduce what he did. And all we came up with was, he type and drive at the same time.
Yep. Pretty much.
So we worked on it harder than they did. But we are going to do our best to milk any kind of significance out of Knight of Cups next time on Craft of Services. Would you listen to this show if you weren't on this show? I feel like we should make a rule where we do like the compliment sandwich, like one amazing thing, one and then another amazing thing, which means artisanal bread and like Oscar Mayer Baloney in the middle or something.
Sure.
To use the, take the metaphor all the way. So anyway, yeah, I don't know. Sometimes things are depressing, but it's good to talk about them with aliens or without.
I mean, I would recommend seeing Arrival. I would not recommend
What about
seeing...
The Arrival with Charlie Sheen?
I don't think I've seen that.
No,
so
yeah,
I
don't
know.
Okay.
All right. And I would, you know, not recommend Where the Buffalo Roam because it's not very good.
Well, anyway, good or bad, we still, I think, get to have interesting conversations about them. And we appreciate you tuning in, listener. And if you want to support us, you can check out our Patreon page, which is something I haven't plugged in a while, but it does exist at patreon.com/justenoughtrope. Also, as I mentioned earlier in the show, we do have an Amazon link on the page, and we'll be including Amazon links to products that we talk about in the show in our show posts. So if you go to Just Enough Trope and you're checking out the site, just browsing around and looking at the pages where we've got our shows, you'll also find links to things like How to Get Where the Buffalo Roam. If you want to check it out, it's not exactly a ringing endorsement from us, but that's how you know we're honest. Even though we're trying to sell you stuff, I'm not going to tell you it's good just because we need to sell it to you. So go check those out. Also, you can check out our social media outlets at Facebook and Twitter. Interest, did it again, Pinter Guy, Sloppy Man.
Nope.
Jimmy Scrambles.
Sloppy Man.
All the different places you can find our stuff. Look for us there. Also, you can find us on iTunes. If you search for Just Enough Trope on iTunes, you can find our show page. And while you're there, help me out.
Yeah.
Subscribe to the show. That way it comes right to you when it's ready, which is twice a week, Monday and Friday, and you can check that out. Also, leave us a review. We would love to hear what you want to hear on the show and how you think we're doing. We love to hear from the listeners. And if you give us a rating, please give us a high one. The way it works is when you give us a rating, say 5 of something or other, we move up in the ranks. iTunes knows that we're doing a good job. We get more exposure and we can bring more things to you and to all kinds of people. And I think that's really what everybody wants.
I think so, too.
So give us 5 canaries that are just present in that scene in Arrival. Actually, they go back to it a couple times.
They do.
They're recording the aliens talking, and you keep hearing, cheep, cheep,
for some cheep. Reason.
And I'm like, something, this means something. To quote another movie they stole from, it never does.
Nope.
It, I guess, metaphorically represents a canary in a coal mine or something, but never comes back. The characters are never in danger until humans screw something up. Why?
Yep.
Why the hashtag? Why the canary? Why so canary? So forget it. Forget the canaries. Give us 5 stars instead. We'd appreciate that. This Friday, I'm pretty excited. We are going to continue our women's rights. Or is it women's rights? Is it one woman? It's a lot of women. It's women's rights. I'd say here's how it goes. Hey, here's the hashtag: WOMENS. WRITES, where we we're going to speak to female creators in the science fiction and fantasy fields. And we are going to talk to Melissa F. Olson, author of the Dead Spots
trilogy.
Is the whole trilogy called like the Dead Spots trilogy?
It's
like
it's actually the Scarlet Bernard.
Yeah, Scarlet Bernard
trilogy.
The first book of which is Dead Spots.
Yes,
and also the Boundary Crossed books.
Yeah,
again, I did it again. What's that one called? That one's called the
That's great. It's the Boundary Magic, I think.
Oh, Boundary Magic.
Books. And she has a new series that the first book is coming out in February where you get to see Scarlet several years later.
Oh, cool. Okay. So, the heroine of the first trilogy we mentioned.
Yeah.
She's also writing novellas for Tor.com, the first one of which is called Nightshades, which is about vampires.
Yes.
And it's pretty cool. And she is an all-around cool dude. We have run into her a couple times at Convergence, the convention in Minneapolis. And we think we've made a date out of it. I think we just talk to her every year now.
Yeah, I think so.
But we've got to have an extra time talking to her. And we have a great interview with her that will be featured on the next show, along with our profile in the comic book club of Ghost in the Shell. Masamune Shiro's or Shiro Masamune's, right?
Depending on how which way
when you got
wanna...
two weird names that are both a pseudonym, which one is the family name, so to speak?
You have to ask him that, I think.
I think I think Shiro is the quote-unquote last name,
the family name.
We will check that out before we get back to you.
Okay.
At this point it's a graphic novel, but it's the collected issues of Ghost in the Shell, the storyline that originally ran in Kodansha magazine as Kikoku Kirudai.
Yes.
That's the last time I'll be able to do that. but directly inspired the anime movie, the live action movie that's going to come out, and a ton of other stuff, some TV shows, and lots of those little toys and mangas and probably prints that you saw in your friends' dorm rooms in college. Mm-hmm. So join us back for that. That is going to be a fun time. Oh boy, I think that's it.
Yeah, I think
so. We should sign off or give the proper coffee cup ring stain alien symbol that means signing off. Did you notice that it looked like...
That's a good point.
It looked like somebody... Yeah. Like whoever the visual designer of the movie is like, how am I going to figure out what I'm going to do for this movie? I don't know what I'm going to clink. He's like, I don't... Wait a minute. Came up with it in a diner.
Uh-huh.
And then at the end when they're like, oh, wait a minute. Now we're out of spoiler territory, so we can't say anything. But it looks like they spilled coffee.
Yes.
You got seven hands and you spill coffee. It doesn't make any sense.
You're like
you'd be
really
the perfect
clumsy.
Wait staff. Yeah. yeah, but that's it for us. We'll see you next time. I'm your host, Caliban.
I'm your co-host, Mikan Hana.
Keep the geek fires burning.